Luke chapter 15, if you have your Bibles, beginning in verse 25, he says here, "Now his elder son was in the field, and as he came and drew nigh to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things mean. And he said unto him, Thy brother is come, and thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he hath received him safe and sound. And he was angry, and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him. And he answering said to his father, Lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandment, and yet thou never gavest me a kid that I might make merry with my friends." Notice what he says there. Thou never gavest me a kid. This morning we're going to talk about the sin of self-pity. All right? Self-pity. So let's go to the Lord in prayer and let's consider this man's attitude and his behavior this morning. Lord, we thank you for this day. Thank you for the blessings. Please help us as we go forward to not only get a good understanding of the parable, but also to be challenged from what we find here. We ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen. Today I want to talk about the curse of self-pity. Now we're looking at a parable. Most of the time this is called the parable of the prodigal son. And we focus on the young man who asked for everything from his dad so he could go out and he could live life to the fullest. And he did. Ran out of everything. Then he returned home and we rejoice over the fact that his father accepted him, received him back in the family, and blessed him. Well, today we're going to talk about one man who was not so happy that his son received all those blessings. Or his brother, excuse me. His brother received all those blessings. And that's the eldest son. The eldest son. This man was what we would call the forgotten son. He was the one who went about his business, did everything that he was supposed to do, remained faithful, stayed home, and evidently never had a big party thrown for him. I imagine he had plenty of parties growing up, but he just didn't have a big one like this youngest son had when he returned. And that bothered him. Notice he says, "Thou never gavest me a kid. Thou never treated me like this. Thou never gave me this attention." And the Bible tells us, we find here in this parable, a man who sulked in self-pity. Let me give you three thoughts on this morning. First, let's talk about the curse of self-pity. The curse of self-pity. First, do you know self-pity will destroy your happiness? Destroy your happiness. Look at this man here. This is the eldest son. And notice, the Bible says here, we're in Luke chapter 15, and notice what we find here. It says in verse 27, "He said unto him, Thy brother is come, thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he hath received him safe and sound." You would expect the next verse might read something like, the eldest son rejoiced and was excited and he ran inside and hugged his brother and welcomed him home. But the Bible tells us instead, it says, "And he was angry and would not go in, therefore came his father out and entreated him." So we find this man became angry. Oh, there was no happiness in his heart. Joy was gone. He was so mad that he refused to go see his brother. He was so mad that he refused to take part in that celebration. He was so mad he refused to fellowship with his family. He just stayed out, didn't go in. That's how mad he was. That's how angry he was with this situation. You'll find, I believe, he hurt himself more than he did anybody else. Think about that for a moment. His brother continued to celebrate. His brother was rejoicing that he'd been accepted. His dad celebrated. He hugged his brother. I imagine the rest of the family and the servants were all happy, and they all enjoyed themselves. And this man out there moping around, he hurt himself more than he did anybody else. You see, self-pity will rob you of happiness. It'll rob you of joy. Part of the problem of self-pity is you're going to see the problems around you. You'll see the problems in others. And often you'll see the problems in everything else. Those that began to feel sorry for themselves eventually began to look around and they see all sorts of problems that they may not have seen before. You know, I find that those that complain are often the most discontented in the world. They're just not happy with anything because they're discontent. And so they're complaining about this and they're griping about that. Self-pity. Nothing's going their way. Nothing's right. And so they're upset. You see, another thing about self-pity is it's going to rob you of your happiness that you could have enjoyed. This man could have enjoyed this time with his brother. He could have celebrated with the family. But because he's moping around in self-pity, he's missing out on those blessings. Missing out on the joy of fellowship because he's so consumed with himself. So it destroys our happiness. Number two, as far as the curse of self-pity, it'll destroy your usefulness, is what it'll destroy. So not only will it destroy your happiness, but I do believe it'll destroy your usefulness. And let me share with you how I believe this is, happens, or how this occurs. This was the eldest son of the family. Basically, you had your dad, and then the eldest son was the one who was to take over the family as far as the business and the estate and everything else. In other words, he was a leader in the family. The youngest son had taken off. The eldest son had remained. That was his responsibility, and he was faithful to that. Well, now, because of self-pity, you'll notice the eldest son is now shirking his responsibilities. He should have been there at that celebration. He should have been part of that. He should have been part of his family. He should have been leading and should have been involved. Instead, we find him moping around outside. At least that's where his dad found him, moping around outside somewhere else. Now, I don't know where he was or what he was doing, but I can imagine. I've had self-pity before. I'll admit to it. I imagine he probably found something to do and used that as an excuse why he couldn't go in. You know, busied himself. You know, I got to get this done. I can't go in there. You know, we can do that when we have self-pity. We can find things to keep us from what we're supposed to be doing. And perhaps that's what he did. Maybe he thought, you know what, no one's going to miss me anyway. No one's going to notice. You know, he's kind of, you know, having his little pity party, so to speak, now anyway. So he's probably thinking, oh, I won't be missed. Nobody's going to notice me. And so he just remained outside. Here's the two thoughts here. First, he did not act as a leader like he should have. He did not take his responsibilities serious, and it was due to his self-pity. You see, self-pity will affect, I guess, the way you carry out your responsibilities. Maybe within your home. That's what's happening here, within the home. That can happen within the home with any relationship, within a marriage relationship, with parents or children. You begin to allow self-pity inside, and the next thing you know, you're not carrying out your responsibilities. Oh, you're quick to point out where others are messing up, but you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. That can also happen within the church too, by the way. Members or even a pastor can have self-pity, and next thing you know, criticizing, complaining, griping, nothing's right. It's because that self-pity has sunk into the heart. And next thing you know, they have shirked their responsibilities. That can happen even in the business world. It can affect your life and your career as well, if you're not careful. You see, what we find here is this man had self-pity. He went out, he moped. By the way, you know, the world continues, even if you have self-pity. It doesn't stop for you. The world's going to continue on. And this man's moping out here. The party's still going. Everyone's celebrating. And he's just trying to get away, not acting like a leader. Also, here's the second thought here underneath as far as being his usefulness being taken away. Instead of being a leader, you know what happened? He became a distraction. We're not told, but I imagine his brother said, "Where's my brother?" You know, the youngest brother who came home. He may have said, "Where's my brother at? Where's my oldest brother?" And people may have said, "Well, we don't know. He was out in the fields earlier." Maybe one servant said, "You know, he's angry for some reason. Ah, he's out there. Just leave him alone. He's moping around." His dad may have said, "Where's my son? This is a time of celebration. Where's he at?" Eventually, we find his dad had to go find him and treat him. In other words, he had to go and plead with him a little bit and beg with him. That's how far out he was because of his self-pity. You know what happened? He became a distraction. He became a problem. This man was no longer a blessing, but a burden. You know what self-pity does? It not only removes us from being happy, but also can remove happiness from others because of our attitude and our problem. You know, when we become selfish, those around us are affected as well, whether it's in your family, your home, or your church. This man here got so filled with self-pity that he refused to go in and celebrate with his brother. Went outside and became a big distraction. Now let's move on here. Let's consider some of the causes of self-pity. Why did he get this way? We find here, let's go to Luke chapter 15. We find here in verse 28, it says, "And he was angry, would not go in, therefore came his father out and entreated him." In verse 29, "And he answering said to his father, 'Lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandment, and yet thou never gavest me a kid that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this thy son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf.'" So let's consider here the cause of his self-pity. I have two thoughts. First, I believe his vision was diminished. Okay? What I mean by that is his focus. He lost focus of what was important. He was distracted, loved ones. The direction of his vision was now the wrong way as far as what he should have been looking at. You know what happened? He saw this celebration for his brother, and he didn't see any reason to rejoice because he was so busy concerned with, why am I not being celebrated? Why have I not had a big party? Why have I not been given all these great things? You see what happened? That self-pity, it was due to his vision being diminished. What I mean by that is the direction of his vision. Why did this man not go in? First off, I believe it's because he's comparing his life to his brother. He's saying, look what my brother did. My brother went out there and he lived it up. He lived in sin and you're giving him this party. And here I've been here, been faithful. I've been doing what I've been supposed to, been leading the family. And you're giving me nothing? You've never thrown a party like this for me. Why are you throwing it for him? You know what happened? He compared his life to his brother's. Be careful of comparing your life with someone else's. We should learn from others, but don't compare it with other people. Think about what this man did. First, here's some comparisons I imagine he drew in his mind. First, he's probably thinking, you know what? I left. Or he left, and I stayed. He probably thought, you know what? He squandered all his money. I put mine in savings. I've been using mine wisely. He may have even tried to use his money to help out his dad or his family a little bit. And then he thinks, you know, my brother lived for himself. Well, I've been living for the family, doing what's right. And then he may have thought, you know what? He abandoned you, Dad. I never abandoned you. I've been right here the whole time. Now, let me just point this out. There's nothing wrong with what he did. He did right. He was correct in what he did as far as his actions, his conduct. You know, his youngest brother was wrong. He did go out in the world. He did live foolishly. He did squander his money. And the eldest son did what was right. The problem is not in the conduct. The problem now is in the attitude of the eldest son, in his heart now. See, he sees his younger brother come. He compares his life with his brother and says, hey, that's not fair that he's got those blessings and I don't. You know, nothing good comes by comparing your life with someone else's. Two reasons why. First, you cannot see the big picture. Okay? You don't know all that's going on in someone else's life. You just get a glimpse of their life for the most part. And you begin to compare your life with someone else. You say, well, you know what? They're getting these blessings and I'm not. That's not fair. Well, guess what? You don't know all that's taking place in their life. That's why I want to give you a warning. I gave it a little bit last week, but let me give it to you again. Be careful of social media. I'm not going to tell you to get rid of your Facebook or Twitter or whatever else you have. That's between you and the Lord. But we're finding out that people are becoming discouraged. And you know what it is? A lot of it's this right here, self-pity. They get online and they find pictures of their friends going everywhere, doing all this stuff, and they're thinking, you know what? How come I don't have all that fun? My life's boring compared to theirs. Keep in mind, they're probably saying the same thing about you when they look at your pictures, okay? What it is, it's just a small glimpse of their life. And by the way, nobody puts the bad times up, all right? Of course, nobody's going to show all the stuff that's going on in their life. So the picture is, everything's good, everything's wonderful, everything's better than what I have, is the thought, if you're not careful. And then self-pity can come in. Now, folks, what we need to remember is never compare ourselves to somebody else because we don't know the big picture. All right? Be content with what God's given you. Thank the Lord for your life. I read recently, someone put it this way. You know, sometimes we drive by, or people drive by. He's the way he put it. He goes, sometimes people will drive by these huge, like say a huge mansion, and the thought will come across their mind, wow, I wish I could change places with them. The way he put it, he said, you know what? He goes, we may be surprised. We drive by some of these places, and if we could see inside the heart, we'd say, I'd never trade places with them. Not saying that everyone that has stuff is having a difficult time, but you know what? We don't know what's going on in their lives. And so to compare our life with someone else's is a quick way to get discouraged. All right? Just don't make any comparisons. Be grateful that God has given your life, and live faithfully unto the Lord. You know, the result of comparing is pretty much self-pity. Here's the other thought. You don't know the big picture, but also, you don't know God's plans for somebody else. Okay? God has a plan for your life. God has a plan for the life of your friends, your brothers or your sisters. And there may be times where God, like that youngest brother in this passage, he needed to hit bottom before he could look up. Now, the eldest brother didn't. The eldest brother took his responsibilities faithful from the beginning. But evidently, that youngest brother needed a little bit of a I guess say, a hard lesson in life before he would get things right. Well, you know what? Sometimes people need that. And you may look and say, well, God's blessing them in their sin and the way they're going. Well, you don't know God's plan for their life. It's not that God's blessing them. It may be that God's just letting them go and then he's about ready to bring them back. Don't make the comparisons. Be faithful. You see, making that comparison, that's what this man did. He made that comparison. He's thinking, man, I've did all this, he's done that, and now I'm not getting this. Just basically let God bless you. Be faithful to God. Here's another thought on, that's the direction of his vision. He's making this comparison. But here's another one real quick, and I call it the distance of our vision. This man here, all of you, when you look at this, his complaints, all his complaints were based upon everything in the moment. Okay, notice he says, you never gave me a party like that. Well, I don't know. Chances are he probably did have some parties as far as he's the oldest son, he's been blessed, may not have had all these celebrations, but he's looking saying, you never did that for me. Another thought on this is, you know, he's looking at this youngest son, he said, guess what? You know, he's giving him this meal. You know what? This man probably had all the food he wanted as far as everything he needed. Yet he's complaining about one meal, one moment. You see, what happens sometimes when we begin to focus on right here, right now, we lose sight of, well, God's working in our life. The future, as far as the big plan and the big picture. And our vision is just short-sighted, so to speak. We're not thinking long-term. We're thinking just right now. Let's make sure we don't get caught up in thinking just right now. Of course, we live right now. We live for the moment. But we trust that God is working for us in the future, that God is going to bring things to pass. You know, by focusing on his brother's blessings, you know what he did? He forgot his own. That's what happened. He focused on all that was happening to his brother, and he forgot to count his own blessings, and he began to get discouraged. Also, by focusing on his brother's blessings, he eventually became bitter and jealous. You know, that's what self-pity does too. It'll lead to bitterness and jealousy. You know, it's never enjoyable to be around a bitter person. Bitter people are discouraging. You know, there are people, you want to be somebody that encourages. There are people, sometimes you're around them, and by the time you leave, you're more discouraged than you are anything else. So you're like, wow, I gotta go find somewhere to be encouraged. Bitterness, that's what it'll do. You get bitter, and you begin to complain, gripe, and have that self-pity. Also, he focused on his brother's blessings, and you know what he did? He came to what I would call a rash conclusion, and he basically said, my brother's got it better than I do. Now, was that true? No, as his dad's going to point out to him in a minute, his brother didn't have it better than him. But that's what he concluded because he saw all that was taking place. You see, what happened here is he had self-pity. Woe is me. This is terrible. He's looking at the moment instead of considering the big picture. And that leads me to my second thought on this. His values were distorted. His vision was diminished. His values were distorted. Basically, his values were two things. One, self. That's it. He cared about himself. Why was he so angry? Because the party was not for him. That's why he was angry. Not because there was any real problem within the family. Not because there were any issues, but simply because it wasn't for him. He was upset that his father had accepted his son. And so for the moment, I'm not saying he was this way all the time, but in our parable, for the moment, he was consumed by selfishness. Why not me? Where's my feast? Where are all my presents or my blessings? Be careful, because it's easy to become selfish. It is. You may not get a promotion. And you may say, well, how come them? And then if you're not careful, that selfishness can just set in. Or you may say, you know what? I've endured this. How come I have to go through this trial? How come they don't have to go through this trial? Why do I have to be tested like this? Why do I have to face these temptations? Why do troubles have to come to me, or these certain troubles? You see, if we're not careful, that selfishness can come in. And next thing you know, we're focusing on ourselves, and self-pity is right there. You see, values become distorted because we are thinking about self. And secondly, values become distorted because we're thinking about stuff. Now, that's not very theological, but that's the way I'll put it, stuff. There's a lot of stuff in this world that can distract us. And that's what happened with this young man, or older man. He was the eldest brother. We're not given an age. But why was he so angered? Because nobody gave him a feast. Stuff. Nobody gave him this great celebration or this great award. He was basically upset because his brother was awarded, given this prize and given this blessing, and it made him mad. He wanted the feast. Even though he probably ate well at every meal, he still wanted a feast. He was still angry. You know what's interesting is He never considered his brother. He was so selfish. His brother's the one who had been living in a pig pen, had no food, and had got to the point, the Bible tells us, where he envied the food that the pigs were eating. The eldest son never had to deal with that. He never considered that, though. He was so consumed with himself. He never bothered to ask his younger brother what was going on, or what was happening, or how low he had gotten in life, and how he'd lost everything, and how he'd been humiliated in the world to the point of hopelessness. He was just so consumed with himself. You see, he was so consumed with stuff. And what happened? He became discontent with his situation. You know, by the way, it's easy to be consumed with stuff, and we can get to the point where we're just never satisfied. Now, there's nothing wrong with the things of the world. We just can't be living for those things. You know, Paul talks about money. He says the love of money is the root of all evil. It's not the money itself. It's that love of money. When we fall in love with that, that consumes us. Let me give you an illustration of how it's easier, how someone, I guess, got to the point where they were so discontent. There's a story of William Randolph Hearst. He was a wealthy newspaper publisher several years back, and he had an incredible collection of art. They said he had a vast collection. He had warehouses filled with art in California, and he would obtain as much as he possibly could. I mean, that was just his... He just loved to go out and collect it. Well, on one occasion, the story is told that he learned of a piece of artwork that he did not have. People were talking about it, and after a while, he wanted it. I mean, he just had to have it. And so he got one of his investigators he hired, and one of his agents, and he said, here, gave him every information and said, find it. Well, he couldn't find it right away. It ended up becoming, I guess you say, one of those, like, his goals, his missions, to find this piece of artwork. And so he told his agent, he goes, you go everywhere. He goes, you search the world over. I need to have this piece. And so he did. Well, several months passed, and finally his agent came unto him, and he met with him. He said, I got some good news. He said, here's the good news. He goes, I found that piece that you've been looking for. And they said, Mr. Hearst got excited. And he said, really? And he said, I got even better news. He goes, it's not going to cost you a thing. And he said he rejoiced. He sat back laughing and rejoiced. And he said, okay. Where's it at? His agent said, you already have it. It's in one of your warehouses in a crate that you never opened. He was so consumed with just collecting stuff that he didn't even realize he had it. From my understanding, it's a true story, by the way, too. You see, we can get so caught up with stuff and things of the world that that's all we're chasing after. And you know what? They don't satisfy. That's the point there. They don't satisfy. This man here was not satisfied. That was his problem. He had all the food he needed. He had all the provisions in his father's house, but he just was not satisfied with those. And when his brother received just a little bit, he became upset and angered. Here's my third thought. Here's the cure. We've got to talk about a cure now, okay? The cure for self-pity. Here's the third and final one. I have three remedies, so to speak, for self-pity. And we find it right in the Scriptures, Luke chapter 15. And we find here in verse 30, it says here, but as soon as thy son was come, he says, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. Now he's talking to his dad here. I could just see him and his dad. Maybe they're sitting down. This is the picture I get. I see him sitting down maybe on a porch or sitting on a chair, and he's just slumped over, this young man, and his dad's come out and found him. And his dad's sitting there, and his dad listens to the whole story. You know, the whole self-pity story, and he listens. And then notice what his dad says. He says in verse 31, he said unto him, son, he says, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found. Here's three thoughts for you. First, notice his dad reminded him of what I would call his presence in his life, his abiding presence. Notice what he said. He said, son, thou art ever with me. You know what we find here? Here's the first cure for self-pity. Never forget that God is always with you. Okay? You see, this young man, or this man, the eldest son, was never away from his dad. He didn't have to endure the troubles that his brother had to endure, or the heartaches, or the difficulties. But due to self-pity, he complained over one evening that his brother got to enjoy. Yet he was constantly with his dad. He was constantly with the family. He enjoyed who knows how many meals with his dad while his brother was gone. You see, his dad reminded him, you were ever with me. You've always enjoyed the blessings of being in my house. This morning, if you ever get to the point, which I hope you don't, but if you ever get to the point where you have self-pity kind of creep in, just remember that God is still with you. He'll never leave you nor forsake you. That's Hebrews. Let's look over at Hebrews 13, verse 5. If you have taking notes, I'm going to read Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 5. It says here, "Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have. For he saith, for he hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee." You know, that's a promise that God has given to us. We find it in the Old Testament too. God will never leave us nor forsake us. You know, when we get our moments of discouragement, our moments of self-pity, we can be reminded that God is still there. You see, circumstances may be bleak. You may look, and if you look around you, you may say, "No, this is just not good." But God's still there. He remains with you. You may be tested, you may be troubled, you may be tempted to the extreme. God is still there. He's not forsaken you. You may be treated unfairly or unjustly, or at least think you've been treated unfairly or unjustly. That's just, this man was thought he was treated unjustly. God remains. God is with you. You see, that's one of the cures for self-pity. Never forget that God is with you. So if God's with you, you're not forgotten. You're not lost. God has allowed things to take place in your life. You may not necessarily agree with Him or like Him at the moment, but it's part of God's plan. You see, God will ever be with you. So if you're tempted to have some self-pity, just remember God remains and He'll never leave you. Number two, notice he was reminded of his, what I would call his abundant provisions. He says, "Son, thou art ever with me." And notice he says next, "All that I have is thine." So he's looking at his son. He says, "You're here. You've never been away from me. And everything I have is yours." This man was complaining because his brother had just one feast. Yet he had the whole estate. That's what self-pity does, though. We take things out of proportion. And we make a big deal out of things that really are minor issues. And they become a problem in our life. His dad looks, and I imagine his dad said, "You know this is yours. You know what? You stayed here. You kept your inheritance. You worked the place. You know I'm giving it to you. It belongs to you. Can't you give your brother a little bit of happiness? Can't you be happy that he's come back?" You see, self-pity robbed him of that. And we find here that he had those possessions right there. Yet because of his self-pity, he forgot it. Here's the thought for us. God has given you much more than you deserve. God has given me much more than I deserve. All right? Philippians 4:19, the Bible tells us there that God shall supply our needs. I don't know about you, but God has given me a lot more than I need. Okay? There's been a lot of wants He's given me through the years. And then there have been a lot of things He's given me I didn't even ask for. You know, God has just been good, and He's just given them to me. God is good to us. Here we find that's what his father reminded him. Now, this is a parable. I mean, that means it's a story that teaches divine truths. And the father says to the son, he said, "Guess what? You have been taken care of. You've been given much more than you deserve, or much more than you probably expected. And now you're complaining over what your brother has." This morning, never forget how much God has given us. Okay, let's start with life, all right? You're here today because God has created you. That begins with God has given you life. I don't know about you, but I'm thankful for life. I enjoy life. It's a blessing to have life. Yeah, there's troubles and trials and difficulties of life, but it's a blessing to be alive. You're here this morning because God has given you another day. He sustained you so you can live. So physical life, we owe that to God. I don't know about you, but I didn't sit down and put myself together. I didn't create my life, and I don't sustain my life. You know, I go through the day, I don't think about breathing. I don't know about you, unless I go to a doctor and they ask me to take those deep breaths and then I think about it. But as far as going throughout my day, I don't think about it. God sustains me. God sustains you. God has given you life. How about spiritual life? You're here this morning, you're saved. It's because God has given you spiritual life. He sent His Son to die on the cross for your sin so you can be saved. You see, God's a personal God. He gives you life. And if you've repented and believed on Jesus Christ, you're saved here this morning because of God. By grace and through faith, you have new life. You see, God has given you life. And I think of my salvation, just salvation, I've been given so much more than I deserve, even in being saved. I don't deserve anything being saved. I didn't deserve any of it. But you think of all the blessings that God has given us with salvation. Some people count them up that there's at least 30 to 40, what they call instant blessings that a person will receive the moment they're saved. For example, the moment you're saved, you're in God's family. You're no longer part of the world. God has brought you into His family. The moment you're saved, you have what I would call the ability to pray and talk to God, to take your requests to Him. You know what's wonderful? God doesn't give a probation period. You know, you start a new job and they say, okay, you got 6 months before you can do this, or maybe 9 months, and you got to test you out a little bit. Once you're saved, you receive all those blessings from God. You can talk to Him. You can take your cares to Him and your concerns to Him. Another one that God gives you is, how about the peace that God will give to your heart? How about the boldness when you need boldness? You see, all those things come from God, and they're given to us the moment we're saved. Thank God He gives those to us. We don't deserve any of those, but those are blessings. Now, here's the thought. We bring it back to our point here. The next time that you're tempted with self-pity, remember how much God has given you. I guess the way I'll put it, when you're tempted with self-pity, count your blessings. You know, that's a song we sing sometimes, count your many blessings. When you're tempted to feel sorry for yourself, think of all the blessings that God has given you. Think of your family, think of your friends, think of your church, think of where you work, think of all the blessings He's brought into your life, and just thank God for those. You begin to think of those blessings, and I tell you what, that self-pity will go away. Even if you're having a difficult day, that self-pity will be removed, and you'll be thanking God for what He's given unto you. Number three, the third cure. Notice he was reminded of what I would call his purpose. In verse 32, it says, it was meet that we should make merry and be glad. And he gives the reason why to his oldest son. He says, for this thy brother was dead. He's alive again and was lost and is found. You know, he's telling his oldest son, he said, you know what? You weren't in that condition. He was. You've been with me. You're fine. You're good. You're secure. You're safe. Everything's fine. But your youngest brother, he was who knows where. He was out there in the world. He was living life to the fullest. He was spending his money. And the Bible makes it clear he was living in sin. I imagine the dad would worry about his son. Others in the family probably cared for him and they prayed for him. And he's out there in the world. And he says, you know what? You were never out there. As far as this parable is concerned, he said, you weren't out there. You were here. You were safe. You're secure. You know, what we find here is he was reminded what I would call of his purpose. In other words, he was with the family and he was doing what he was supposed to be doing. Here's the thought. God has a plan for your life. Okay, Romans 8:28. We know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them which are called according to His purpose. Okay, if you're saved here this morning, you're called according to His purpose. And He's got a plan for you. He's got a purpose for your life. And God will work that out in your life. You see, that purpose in your life or that plan in your life is not the same as someone else's. And that's fine. That's good. It's best that we have our own life, that God has given us our own direction. What we need to do is abide with God and be content.